Hello and welcome to another episode of Django Chat, a weekly podcast on the Django web framework. I'm Will Vincent, joined as ever by Carlton Gibson. Hi, Carlton.
Hello, Will.
And this week, we're very pleased to have Matthew Frere of Just Django on. Welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on.
So I've, from afar, seen you've been pumping out great Django content for well over a year now. And now you have both on, first on YouTube is when I saw you, and then now you have the JustDjango.com site. I'm so really interested to talk about how you got into Django, building that out, and talk about teaching Django, since you and I both do a lot of that. So maybe I'll start with, you know, what's your quick story? How did you get into programming and find your way to Django?
So I didn't study any kind of degree that was really programming based. I did industrial engineering, or otherwise systems engineering. And in the second year, we had a module of Python, which wasn't really too in-depth, but just kind of an introductory module. And after that, I was kind of hooked on the idea. But really at a beginner level, I didn't know that you could even build websites with Python. And I eventually then found the Django project, saw the 1,600 page PDF that came along with it. And
I wondered who used that. I wonder if anyone.
Well, I won't lie and say I used it, but it definitely, it kind of gave me hope. I was like, wow, there's obviously something here. So yeah, I started learning it, and the rest is history.
And how long ago was that? Just so listeners can get a sense of the journey. Because yep. I mean, for me, I'm only, I don't know, several years into my journey. So I don't want everyone to think everyone's like Carlton and, you know, 20 years into Django.
I'm not 20. Like, when did I start using? Hang on, before. Let's not talk about Matthew. Let's talk about me. I started 2009, something like that, 2008. About 1.0, 1.1, that kind of.
Yeah.
With Django or with programming?
Not with. With Django.
With Django.
With Django.
No, I came in like 1.11.
Yeah, right. So,
okay. Oh, yeah. Well, LTO.
It was mid 2016 that I started. Really, yeah, that was the first time I'd seen it. And so, yeah, 3.5 years going, going on 4 years.
Yeah, because Django 1.11 has just gone end of life. So that had sort of, you know.
Oh, yeah, no.
That was the long-term support.
Yeah, no, I mean, obviously now completely moved off, but that's when I came in.
Fine, fantastic.
And do you recall what resources were helpful back then when you were starting out? Because I imagine if you're creating resources now, like me, you weren't entirely pleased with what was out there.
Yeah, that definitely was it. So I basically learned everything from a YouTube channel called Coding for Entrepreneurs. And
oh, from Justin's thing.
Yeah. I think he was probably the best learning resource at the time. I used his website for a little bit, probably about a month or so, and then I kind of got the hang of it, and was just then started building my own project. So yeah, mainly him. He's the number one thing, the number one resource that pops up.
Interesting. Yeah, I think certainly for video, he has been, and he's probably still one of the top. I don't know him at all personally. I don't think he goes to Django cons or anything, but he has a bit of content. He's very into function based views, as I recall the things that I saw. Maybe you had this. I had this where I saw his content and I thought his style was good. There were things I would change, and sometimes I got a little bit lost, which is partly why I think it's good to have lots of people teaching Django, because everyone learns differently and everyone presents it differently. So yeah, he does a lot of stuff. That's great. So then, do you use it so professionally now, or is like, what's your day-to-day role? Cause you run Just Django, which is a lot of work. Are you able to use Django professionally or not?
Yeah. So I started using it professionally about a year and a half ago. And so that was a mixture of things, whether it was freelancing or actual projects that could generate some money, and actually working full time. So I've recently moved on to now doing just Django full time for the time being, and exploring some other options. But yeah, professionally in the traditional sense of the word, for a year and a bit.
Got it.
And does Is just Django, the Just Django site built with Django itself? Yeah, it itself? Is.
Wouldn't that be a crime if it wasn't?
Yeah, that's kind of cool.
Well, it happens. You know,
Django forums run on, you know, some movie thing.
Yes, yeah, well. I think it's one of those things. It's like you got to prove it in some way that you can back up what you say. So at least do the people the courtesy. And obviously no one knows, but I mean, if you were to open source your project, which I have ideas of doing, then at least people can see that, oh, okay, so this is what a fairly built out Django project looks like.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, I mean, I guess if you're coming up with tutorials and stuff, to be it, to have a, you know, something real that you can experiment with and see what breaks, exactly, and see what doesn't, it's much easier than coming up with test projects.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Yeah.
So the two kind of main areas I wanted to talk to you about today was building Just Django, because I think that there's a lot to be interesting about how you iterated through that. And then your content, kind of your approach on things like using pipenv, which I use, and we can get into all that. But maybe what was the earliest stage of Just Django? Like, what was that iteration like for you? Because I think it's helpful for people to hear how someone works through a project, and especially solo projects, you actually understand how that all plays out, whereas in a team, you don't as much.
Yeah.
So what did you start with? What was the prototype?
Well, the very, very, very first prototype was probably a project I didn't even build. So just going with something that already kind of had most of what I was looking for. And that was more just to understand everything, to really understand everything. So that, I think that was also something from coding for entrepreneurs that I found. I worked with that for a little bit. And then eventually you understand it and you realize, oh, but I wanted to maybe have this little tweak. And then you add that tweak. This is now just a normal Django project, so not using Django REST framework or anything, just pure Django. And eventually, those little tweaks keep happening, which is then what builds on your skills. And then eventually, the whole project is unrecognizable from what you kind of started with. And I mean, I can't count how many times I'd messed up the database on DigitalOcean and had to restructure everything. And had to or rebuilt this entire thing from scratch. But by doing that, then you really learn the basics, and it eventually becomes then what it is today, which is then with Django REST framework. And then the front end is completely built in React. So it's a completely different thing. But
oh, wow.
Interesting.
Yeah, because it looks fantastic. I know I think you just did a redesign with Tailwind. Is that right? Yeah, that's something I've played a little bit about, but I really want to find the time to do. How did you find Tailwind, since this is a Django podcast?
I really enjoyed it. I'm not much of a CSS fan, or actually I'll say I'm not much of a front end fan. I don't think I have great UI design skills, where Adam Wathan, the creative of Tailwind, he kind of has this reinforcement of a theme that you can build UIs with logic and with analysis. And Tailwind is kind of, the way you use it follows a more analytical approach than a more creative approach. At least that's how I see it in my own head. So when you don't work with CSS at all and you're just adding classes to HTML, it removes an entire element of front-end development. And yeah, I loved it. I thought it was amazing. And I'm definitely going to keep using it.
Yeah, because it's all about basically having utility classes that you can reuse instead of, you know, CSS files that, you know, if you use Bootstrap, which like I'm currently using, but what always happens is then you just customize everything.
Exactly.
Or if you're on a team project, you just make longer and longer names to keep it all custom, and then it's a mess.
Yeah.
And Tailwind, I guess the whole idea is that it, from the beginning, with this idea of utilities, right, you kind of avoid that. It's sort of Lego pieces you can put together.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah. No, I thoroughly enjoy it. So your class names get really long, but you understand it. I think that's the point. It's so readable. Everything, as you read it, it does what it says. So it's so easy to understand. If you're starting out with CSS, it's probably not the best because it's abstracted everything away from you. But as you I don't think you need to be an advanced user at all to move straight to it and just forget about it, kind of.
Right. Well, and how are you, and Carlton, jump in. I know I have a lot of questions because I've used your site a bit because you sent me a link, and actually before that I'd taken a look. I'm curious, how do you, like, what does the models look like? Because you're hosting videos, you have payments. Like, what are kind of the main models that you're, you know, now at with all these iterations? Mm. If you're willing to talk about that.
Yeah, sure. So the main model is the course model for sure. That's that and the lecture model. Probably the lecture model is the biggest now. Because that's
a lecture within a course, like a one to many.
Yeah, sorry. I'll explain. So a course being a course which has multiple lectures in it, and each lecture can contain a video. Right now you can't see the other content that's coming soon, but in design it doesn't have to be a video. It can be a document, or it can be other kinds of content. So like a quiz, mm-hmm. or a project, so something that's going to have a different form in the front end. So that's all linked inside a lecture. It can be different types, and so there's quite a lot on that. There's files that you can download, links to GitHub, descriptions, all the basically one of everything. There's Boolean fields, there's character fields, there's everything on that that's on that. And so then that's linked to the course, and the course is then where all the general information is, and the course is linked to a roadmap, and the roadmap has then got is like the overseer of all the courses, so everything falls under that.
So that's where slash courses, that's the roadmap model that you're... Oh, actually, you don't have a slash courses, but I assume you have sort of a list view on the...
Yeah, so if you... Right now, there's only one roadmap, so I kind of restructured it where there used to be some Python courses and JavaScript courses, but I guess when your site's called just Django, everyone just wants to learn Django, so that's the more popular
content.
They
want everything, but yeah.
Just Django and some Python.
And some Python and some JavaScript, and yeah. No, so it's... there's only one roadmap.
I think that's a great idea, having the roadmap, because certainly like a linear approach is what people need, and it's kind of hard to...
That's exactly it. That's exactly it.
And you're using Vimeo now? Were you always using Vimeo to host? Because I think, I'm asking because like I have a Learn Django site we talked about last week. It's much earlier stage than yours. There's sort of like Wistia and Vimeo are the two options I see out there. And Wistia being maybe a bit better, but a lot more expensive.
Oh, yeah, a lot. Yeah. I remember evaluating.
Like a lot more expensive.
Yeah, a lot. I evaluated the options about maybe a year and a half ago, and I had to completely write off Wistia. It's just way too expensive. And so I was hosting on AWS, and that worked pretty well for a pretty long time. And it's actually really cheap. If you compress your videos and you store them on there, then...
Oh, so yeah, just like an S3 bucket.
Yeah, in an S3 bucket, and then you can set up a CloudFront just to speed it up a little bit.
Yeah.
But then what would you use for controls and things like that? Because that's where Vimeo comes in, right? They've got these nice interfaces on your videos.
Yeah,
and
you get more analytics out of it. So you actually get to see how many views a video gets and how many finishes a video gets. And impressions. Right. So it ties in with Google Analytics as well, which is really nice. So you can actually start to get a more thorough understanding of, are people actually watching this video or are they not? So that's the main reason for switching it over, as well as I think there's an attractiveness to using a service that's dedicated to one thing. So not to say that they will be amazing, but I do have some confidence that this is a site that their only service is literally just delivering video hosting. And some part of me really likes that. And the pricing is also pretty good. So, yeah.
But I always I use Vimeo in past projects for exactly that reason, in that the cost of Vimeo was much less than, you know, even the development time of an alternative player by the time you've assessed the open source alternatives and customized and... You know, I've already paid for 6 months of video. Just think Vimeo, just thinking about it. Like, just use Vimeo or use, you know, in other service for these particular things, especially if you've got a small team where you just don't have the capacity to allocate human hours to being the video person.
Yeah. I started using an open source video video tool, which is called Plyr. I don't know how you pronounce it. Plyr. And that integrates with Vimeo, integrates with YouTube, with your own videos as well. So I didn't have to spend a lot of time on developing that, thankfully. But yeah, I wish I knew about Vimeo's, well, knew about it. I did know about it, but I wish I evaluated it sooner, because I agree with what you're saying. Yeah, it saves time.
Yeah.
Well, and some people I've seen also do, you can do YouTube, you can do private videos, though, which I believe is free, except then you see the ads on there, so it's not quite the same experience.
Okay. I mean,
like you can there's a way to do it so it's private videos, or I guess maybe it's private URLs. And I believe but I find it, not as good as an experience as, Vimeo or Wistia, obviously, because you still have like the ads on there.
Yeah. But
the flip side is it's free for the content creator.
Yeah, Vimeo Pro is, I'd say, the best option to go with. It's got more than enough storage, more than enough allowance on uploading and downloading. So you got no ads, but also the privacy. So you can set what domains the videos are allowed to be hosted from. And that's obviously a huge deal if you're trying to protect those videos.
Right. Yeah, I'll resist the urge to get into like a privacy thing with you, because I'm sure, just as for me, I periodically have to go through and remove PDFs of my stuff from the web, and with you as video. We'll just note that exists, and if you want people to create content, don't steal it. So I'll leave it at that. I did have so Tailwind and React. Which one did you add first? I'm curious. Did you
React?
And then just to have, so you went server-side Django, DRF, and then React, and then finally Tailwind. Was that the progression?
Yeah. So the when it was server-side Django, there were a couple pages where I would experiment with a React app purely for loading just the course list.
Yeah.
And so I'd build out literally just one component that fetches all the courses and renders them nicer. And then eventually you do that for two pages, and it's really not a great way to go about it, but because you're managing so many React projects, but you get the hang of it so quickly, and then it all becomes a React project. And then after that, Tailwind. Yep.
And did you consider using Vue at all, or was it just React from the beginning?
No, I've not properly taken a look at Vue. Once I'd learned React, I think I was so hooked, I hope you get the pun there. On it, that it didn't really make sense. I wasn't being forced to learn it for any kind of project, so it was meeting all my needs.
Carlton, you got a question?
So I'm just interested in that, because I always beat the drum for
Carlton likes Elm.
So on the front end side, I love Elm, and that's fine. And the reason I use Elm there is it just keeps me out of the whole JavaScript world, and I can go along and like build my things, and I don't have to worry about JavaScript. And then alongside that, I use Tailwind. I'm a big fan of Tailwind, enjoying that massively. That's my happy little world, and you know, you're welcome to come and join me in that or not, and we're not going to argue about it. On the sort of other side, though, I always kind of try and render as much as I can statically on the server. I can see where a site like yours, where you've logged in and it's an app, once you're in a kind of app environment, there's no reason not to go fully front end and single page.
Yep.
But where you're looking at pages that you want to load up quick, and you want, for search engine purposes or for that first load, I'd always try and render things server side, and then sprinkle on an Elm element or a JavaScript element, like you were talking about. But you were saying that the React components, they kind of ate the rest of the site.
pretty much
one by one.
I actually forgot there's a in-between stage where I actually tried Next.js for quite a while.
Seeing that. What is Next.js? I've seen that pop up a few times. So people are like,
It's server-side React, basically.
Okay.
So that was that was something I was using for probably the, a better part of about 4 or 5 months. And because of the exact reason you just said, for loading for SEO purposes. So I had a test phase of articles that were being written and put on the site as well, which I eventually went against, which are now removed. But during that time, I was using Next.js because I was using React. So it was kind of like, how do I use React but get the best of both? And Next.js filled that. And that just came with a lot of headaches because of trying to serve it in a cost-effective way. Because basically the way it's set up is that you use their add-on service to Next, which is their hosting service, and it can get pretty expensive really quickly, but definitely worth it if you can do it, and if you have the money to do it, then sure. But for solo dev, it just wasn't worth it, and then I decided to go single page app instead.
Okay, interesting.
And so you're just using, I guess, React Router. Is that still how you do URLs
Yeah, React Router.
Yeah, and I notice you have a subdomain for it's justdjango.com, and then when you log in, it's learn.
Yes.
justdjango.com. I was curious why that structure.
So
is it two separate sites? I mean, but you're doing the login on
Django. They're
one.
Two separate sites. The one is a landing page, and then the learn.justdjango is the actual learning app. So the reason I did that was because I had future ideas for what I wanted to do on the actual landing page itself. Which is stuff I'm going to be getting to soon. So that could be different services besides learning. So learn is supposed to be just the separate thing of, if you want to learn Django, then that's on its own subdomain. It's its own thing.
Okay. Yeah, because as I think there's a small SEO hit if you use a subdomain, I believe, they're vague about it, but I think but these days, I don't know, Carlton, do you know? I thought there was some giant meh
at that point. Like, if they're going to penalize your content because it's on a subdomain of yours, meh.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I can agree with that.
So authentication, you can log in with Google or with email username, I think is right.
Just email and password, yeah.
Just email password. So are you using Django OAuth, or how are you configuring?
Yeah, Django OAuth, and then Django REST OAuth for setting it up in the API.
Nice. Yeah, those are the ones I recommend, or I like using as well.
And can I just ask, does the learn, like, how do you structure the auth for the subdomain? Is that a shared domain cookie? Or
so right
is it...
now it's just token authentication, JWT authentication,
right,
with the API, which is on another subdomain.
Oh, okay.
And are you using the simple JWT package?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Okay, yeah, we're going to have... David, I think, is the author. We're going to have him on the podcast a little bit later.
Awesome.
Because that's like the new way to do it. Jose had the older REST framework, JWT.
Yes.
Very cool. So payments. This is one I'm curious about personally because I have thoughts. But how are you? What are you doing now, and how did you get to that point? Because I find it challenging to do payments on these kind of sites.
Yeah. So, structure-wise, it's a subscription model. So... you pay to have access for every month, or you can now get access to a yearly membership and get a discount with that. So I'm using Stripe, and
are you using SLA, SLC, the EU thing?
Oh, the SCA ready.
SCA?
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm using that. Okay.
Yeah. So I'm using that. There wasn't really much of a decision. So because I'm living in South Africa, there's even more of a challenge for how you can get payments online, especially if you're trying to do that in a React front end. So lucky enough, I'm actually Portuguese. So with the Portuguese passport, it gives me a little bit more flexibility because Stripe is supported in Portugal. So like that, it was kind of... I want to say only option, but also like no brainer in a way that I had to go with Stripe.
So are you running it through a Portuguese bank then? They don't have South African support?
No South African support.
Oh, wow. Yeah, it's it's crazy how they seem ubiquitous, but there's still so many countries they're not in. And then, of course, you may have, you know, there's countries like Iran and stuff where there's lots of developers mm-hmm. and they're frozen out of the normal system. And they email you and say, I want access. And it's, you know, it's hard to...
Yeah, it's tough. If also with... Because a lot of the people that watch the videos on YouTube are also from Africa. And you can't... people living in Africa can't use Stripe as a payment gateway. Your average person, like not everyone has a mm-hmm. Portuguese bank account, so it's not that simple. So I know all about the technicalities of setting up payments and all the options. But I'm definitely interested in PayPal as well, because I think that's a little bit more international.
I mean that would be the ultimate, right? Is to have Stripe plus PayPal, but not have some crufty company with changing API taking a huge cut sitting over.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Well, and then there's I don't even know how it is in South Africa, but in the US the whole taxes piece is just like a total freaking nightmare. Basically my take is it's impossible to do legally because no one even knows what the legal situation is, but you're supposed to, you know, collect tax in every state and then every country is different and where's your nexus, and it's just like, you know, on some level, I think most of the laws are like, unless you're at seven figures, you're exempt. But I've spent so much time and talked to so many lawyers, and I don't even know how you would do it. And most people I talk to, you know, anecdotally, who run much more popular sites with much more money, they're kind of like, I don't know. Which is terrible, right? Because it's like, I want to do the right thing, but it's just like impossible to do. Because there's services like, what is it, like TaxJar and stuff that will calculate different taxes.
Yeah.
Roll into your things, but it's like, I was just curious if you had an answer to that
I don't either. I mean, part of me just wants to say wait for them to come knocking, but
I'm not the biggest fish here.
Yeah, so but obviously no, you want to know as much as possible before you do something like that, especially in my case where the money's actually... Because now I'm sitting in South Africa, so I'm earning it here, but it's going through a different country into a different bank account. How does that, and the taxes involved with that as well. So, but yeah.
Have you thought at all about purchasing power parity or changing the price based on where someone, I mean, this is something I've looked at because obviously, right, you probably get people saying I'm in Africa and I don't, you know, $100 is a lot.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on that?
No, I'm definitely pro the idea. So I do understand that situation. I haven't set it up yet, but yeah, if there's a doable way to implement it, then yeah, I'm all for it.
Yeah, I haven't. I mean, conceptually, I understand how you do it. You can. West Boss implements this, and actually, I think they just on his podcast he just talked a little bit about how he implements it. And I guess he uses Cloudflare. So he can have confidence that someone is where they actually are.
Yeah, that's actually smart.
But it would be nice if there's a little package that Stripe provided that made that happen. But I guess Stripe's got other things to worry about.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been, because I use Gumroad for my books, and Gumroad, I'm happy with the service, but I've... you know, talk directly to the CEO saying this would be really important to have and it's not on the roadmap for them.
That's interesting.
Such as it is. So the way you've structured your content, I had just some notes going, because I've gone through some of your videos, like PipEnv, you still use it. I still use it. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on...
It's just got a new release.
Did that come out? They said they were going to do it. Know. Did it actually come out?
Whoa, okay. I believe it got a new release. I don't know.
Selfishly, I hope they fix it just so I don't have to switch everything over. Because the promise of it is nice, is like, you know, being like Yarn or NPM, but there's issues with it. But you're still using it? I guess that's the question.
Okay, I definitely have to put a disclaimer before saying something stupid that I'm definitely no technical expert when it comes to this stuff. So I'm not...
No one is.
For me, it's kind of always an experiment. So you read about it, you see, okay, well, this is what it says it can do. So let's test it out and see. And I haven't had any issues with it. So I don't see why I would, why I'd move off of it. And integrating Django and Viron specifically with it works really well for me in editors like PyCharm. The development flow is just, it's too good. So there's no reason for me to move off of it.
Do you use Docker? I assume not, if you're happy with Pipenv.
I've played around with it a lot, and actually the site is, or the API technically is using Docker under the hood.
Oh, okay.
But it's using an open source project called Cap Rover.
Which, I don't know that.
Yeah, it's basically this guy that made a platform as a service that mimics like how Heroku works. It's probably one of the coolest things I've ever...
So it's like a Django hosting site that's cool?
Well, anything hosting. There's all these different apps that you can host. And under the hood, it's Docker. So that's what I'm using.
How do you spell that?
Caprover. It used to be called Captain DuckDuck.
Huh. Nice.
Which, that's way simpler.
Yeah, I don't know why they changed the name. That's left it at that. I think SEO is brilliant on that.
Oh, here it is. Okay, we'll put it in the links.
The VC was like, no, you're not having Captain DuckDuck.
Yeah, well, maybe we can. So deployment, you cover several ways. I think you cover AWS and DigitalOcean, and maybe is that
yeah,
it, or
yeah
is there
AWS
another way?
Heroku, DigitalOcean, Python Anywhere, and.
Yeah.
And Cap Rover, which is technically any server, DigitalOcean, Linode.
What are your thoughts on deployment? I mean, because for me, we talk about this in the podcast. Usually, someone has one that works for them, and they just use it. And I'm often asked to do tutorials on all these different things, and the problem is they change so often that I don't know how I would keep up to date with them. So I'm impressed that you have, video tutorials even of these things.
It does provide a challenge because then I would need to go and update them. So I'm a huge fan of DigitalOcean. I'm kind of that over anything else at the moment, purely because of starting with AWS, it's just so much to take in. They've cleaned up the UI a little bit.
It's very enterprise. Yeah,
but really, when I was getting into it, it's just a nightmare for a beginner. I mean, you click the services button, and it's just too much. So,
yeah.
So, and even with all the resources, I mean, if you're getting lost within the resources, that's a problem. So, DigitalOcean is simple. It's there's I think one guide on their like documentation or community side of things, which is just how to deploy Django with Nginx. And I mean, if you follow that, that's it. That's all you need. And you get a really good understanding of all the pieces that fit together for how a server actually works. So it's like the best of both worlds.
And do they do hosted databases, or they still don't?
It's just a recent feature, right?
Because that's a big... To me, that was the biggest hurdle, especially when teaching it or even using it myself, was like, it's just like, I don't want to have to, once you've used a managed
database.
That's
the question, right? Because, if you go to, Azure, they've got the app service there, and it's really easy to bung your Django app. But what are you going to do for a database? Well, okay, so they've got a hosted Postgres, and you can spin up one of those, and, hang on, but I can easily spend a lot of money there, so I've got to start thinking, and the pricing's opaque, and it's... And the same on AWS. They've got a free tier. You can get a micro instance. You can stick up, your Django app, but then you're not going to run a database on that one little instance, and so you look at RDS, and you've got the same issue. How do I spin up? Mm-hmm. And, Heroku, they've got the Postgres going on there, so you can spin up one of those. But it's always the database.
Pretty much, yeah.
All the droplet. Yeah, the droplet's great, and you can get your free droplet. You put your app on it free, but I need a database.
Yes. Yeah, that's true. So with the managed database that DigitalOcean provides, I find because the lowest price is $15 per month, so that is not too bad. If you just need to get something up and running, and it's super simple, it makes a lot of sense how they've designed everything. But the pricing on AWS and Azure that I've experienced escalates ridiculously fast, and
If you're not careful.
Yeah, if you're not careful. But even still, I mean, I would say that most people who start using it don't fully understand. I definitely don't fully understand how they decide when things need to scale up, like what the criteria is. Because if they scale it up when they think that the requests are starting to get a bit high, what does high mean? Because if that's just 10 people and they think that everyone needs to have the best experience, then your costs are going to be insane. So that's why I prefer to just manage it with a fixed price.
Yeah, no, I mean, the auto-scaling is massively dangerous, right?
Yeah.
If you're starting up like a small project, and we're talking about, you know, solo projects here, you've built from scratch, you want to spin up a server, a database thing, you know, maybe a load balancer, maybe a bucket for, you know, blob files. You know, that's nice and containable. It's going to cost you $20, $30, $40 a month. It's going to be, you know, that's doable. And then you all of a sudden click a button. It's like, oh, no, we've scaled up. We've got three of these now. And hang on, but that's 120. And, you know, I'm not serving that much traffic.
Yeah.
That's my, actually, that, and that's, it's the opacity rather than the price that I think is the issue, which is what you're getting at, which I have with actually Netlify now, which I use for my static sites. And I really like, and I don't begrudge them getting a lot more aggressive on charging the last couple of months, but the way they do it is not clear at all to me. They do it, anyways, that's a separate thing. But so it's the not understanding it, right? It's like, I don't mind paying for something if I understand what it's coming from and I can evaluate that trade-off, but when it's unclear.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
I agree with that.
The AWS, there was a story came past that, you know, when you go and log in, it's like a choice button. Is this for production? And you're like, well, yeah, this is for production. And if you click that button, you're automatically in like multiple availability zones and regions, you know, and that's $1,000 a month just to start up.
Yeah.
Well, I guess if you're paying for it, you probably shouldn't be using AWS anyways, right? If it's actually your money.
But yeah,
that's a great criteria. Yeah.
Well, we're coming a little bit up on time. I did want to ask you about, you've got a new series on packages where you're going through some popular packages on YouTube.
Yeah.
And TastyPy is one of them.
Yes.
And so tell me what I'm missing on TastyPy, because my sense is it's a bit out of date, but you're quite keen on it, right?
Yeah.
And Carlton can add in, because Carlton used it quite a bit back in the day as well.
Yeah, I liked it. I have this thing for really simple packages. I think there's a lot of packages that do so much, and it's like, well, I just had to learn Django. Now I need to learn a package in Django. Like this, you know, it never ends. It never ends. Yeah, it's just a huge hole. Where some of these packages, they say this is the promise, and they deliver on that, and that's it. So you know what you're getting. But I really like the kind of resource. So basically, the whole idea is that you have a resource which you plug into your model into, and it's the same syntax as like a serializer and a form and all that. So you'll have a model resource, and then it gives you all the URLs that you need for your CRUD operations. And it's in a uniform format, so everything's the same. You can decide how you want to nest your relationships. So if you have foreign keys, you can decide how you want to embed that into the data that's coming back. I found it to be, if you have a really just a handful of models and you need to make that an API, I'm pretty confident that would be your best bet sometimes. But a lot of people have been saying do a comparison with the Django REST framework and TastyPy, and I mean, yeah, the Django REST framework's a monster, so I don't know if there's much of to compare, but yeah, it's still really, I really enjoyed it. It's really good.
I love that you put that on there, because it definitely challenged my assumption that it was just out of date. So that's kind of why I asked. I was like, oh, I should.
It's kind of curious because, you know, REST framework's origin story is, well, there was TastyPy and, you know, it came along and, but not me, but like REST framework came along and had these, you know, this different way of doing it. The generic views view sets were much later, generic views and serializers. And that was REST framework's story. And it's nice, you know, what, 8 years later or something to hear.
Yeah,
no, actually, TastyPy's got it right the way it's doing this for some cases. You know.
Well, are there, I've just thrown questions at you the whole time. Are there any things you want to discuss or share, projects or things you've been working on?
Well, yeah, I've been really bad on other projects at the moment. It's too many ideas and not enough execution. But no, there's, I think maybe I can throw this idea and get some feedback on that. So there's, in my mind, there's a little bit of a gap between being someone who just got a job or just got into a position where they can actually use software development to make a living, and the learning phase, which is kind of this in-between phase, which is like, I'm trying to build an online presence. I'm trying to build like an online portfolio. I'm trying to get involved in the right projects. I'm trying to find people to work with or find projects to work on. But there's just no real centered place for that. There isn't a... I mean, I Googled how to find other developers and it was like, go on Twitter. And I was like, no, that's that's not a solution. I mean, that's Twitter's for everybody. There's nothing like that for developers. So I think that's something that's been playing on my mind as a side project that I think would be interesting to see how that would go out. So I don't know what your thoughts are on that.
My initial thought is that the thing that I recommend people to do is go to the meetups if you can. If you live in the city and there's a meetup on Django and you're into Django, go to the Django meetup, because you know that's where you'll meet other people and then you'll get connections and that will be a way into a job and that kind of thing. So if you can get some sort of face-to-face thing, then super do it. Other than that, yeah, some kind of online. Where is that? It's not LinkedIn, is it? Like,
well, there's Django. I mean, there's Django itself. We've talked about that it is intimidating, but there's a lot of, if you put the time in, there's a whole bunch of low-lying tickets, even documentation things that beginners can contribute to. And if you've contributed to Django itself in whatever capacity, that's certainly
and to go to a DjangoCon if you can, you know, if you can get to one, then, you know, go to DjangoCon, because that's where you'll meet the community and it's just amazing and, you know, all those kind of things.
Just got to quickly mention that in there.
Yeah, yeah, no, look, I mean, look, DjangoCon's super gum.
Yeah, that's how Carlton and I met. I mean, I do think it is that, I mean, it's that gap from junior dev to regular dev, and it's just that gap of, you know, copying projects to what next. I mean, so I advise people to, you know, and because I can tell people that, you know, if you've built a blog or you've built, you know, a CRUD thing, you've kind of already built everything, but that's because we understand the patterns
and we
built those things. So I try to tell people, like, you should build 5 to 10 projects and you should take the time to think and look at exactly how similar they are, because you have CRUD, you have auth, you have foreign keys, and that's 90% of it, but you just have to build it. So don't just copy me, like take the blog and turn it into, I don't know, to-do list, or, you know, just kind of do the reps. But I get that the problem is beginners get stuck and then they get really stuck and they don't know how to unstuck themselves. And that's an unproductive space of time. So I actually, the other day I was seeing, this may sound random, but to me it made sense. So there's this martial art called Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, and these brothers who teach it, Gracie brothers, they have an online thing called Gracie University where they have videos and they teach in a linear way the classes that they give. And the way they've melded the two together is they say, take the video classes, practice on your own or wherever, then you can go to a Gracie-affiliated studio for your belt tests to prove in person that you know the moves, but you're basically not limited by lack of access. And this, so I think it's that combination of digital and in-person. So I often think of really what someone needs is they need one of us to look at their project and evaluate it and give feedback on it. But it's really hard to scale that.
Yeah.
And if there was a way to do that, if there's a way to scale that, or a way to have a crew of people who, you know, got paid, who could validate and do some sort of check mark. I mean, people ask the Django Software Foundation, is there an accreditation course for Django the way there is for Microsoft things? It's really hard to do well, but I think that's kind of what you need, is you need some sort of mentorship and you need, so I don't know. So I don't know exactly. I don't know how you would scale that, because the reality is our time is valuable and I don't necessarily want to look at 100 different spins on a blog, but someone needs that. So yeah, it's that in-person piece. And you know, people have tried ways where you do an internship or something, you take someone on and they commit to 2 years and you say, I'll mentor you for a year. I think there's actually quite a bit to that, But that's, you know, people who've done it kind of get burned out on that because they train someone and then they
leave. The difficulty we have as well is that, say, for instance, we've got the Django forum or the Django users mailing list where, you know, there are people who know their stuff there and but they've only got so much energy and time. And, you know, so you've kind of got to be at a certain level to be able to ask the question in a way that will get a suitable response. But if you're not at that level and you just kind of, you need help, you need a bit more mentoring, a bit more guidance, quite often the people who are active and they're giving a lot of their time to this forum or to this mailing list, they just haven't got the energy to respond to you in a way that will get you to your solution. That's where the gap is, I think.
Well, and you may have this. I mean, I have people pretty regularly ask me to, you know, hourly get help with things. And in general, I don't, because the time it takes to set up and this and that, it's just not worth it. I mean, I sort of would like to do it, but the logistics of it doesn't scale for me personally.
What are your thoughts on that, right?
Because I feel bad to charge someone kind of what my hourly rate would be if they're a beginner, but the reality is, you know, that is what it is. Like, if I can't directly turn it into a project or a teaching resource, there's only so much I can kind of give.
Yeah, I think it's... I agree with that. I mean, you can't charge them that rate, and you can't help every single person that says, help, your video didn't work or your article didn't work. I think there's room there, not so much to make it that someone needs to mentor someone, because like you say, that just can't scale. But the ability to connect people, I think, is actually more than enough. If you can just provide connection, an easy way of connecting, the rest will sort itself out.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, and I, you know, my quick take I tell people is, I say, okay, you want to get hired with Django, have at least 3 projects up on GitHub they can be really basic, but just build them well and be able to back up your choices. Contribute to Django and have a personal blog.
Or like, not just contribute to Django, 1%. Contribute to one of the projects in the Django ecosystem, right? If you don't want to contribute to Django itself, contribute to, I don't know, AN Django extra projects.
Because that proves you know how to work with people and you're actually part of the community. Having the 3 projects is something that, you know, I want to look at code before I talk to someone in person, probably. And, you know, we can quickly get a sense of stuff, and I'd rather talk about code than toss whiteboard questions.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah.
And then a personal blog, just to share your story and give a sense of who you are. Those are kind of that's the 3 things I give people as advice. But, you know, and it's hard to do all those when you're starting out and you don't have confidence in what do I set up my personal site with? You know, do I build it with Django? And I would say that's overkill. Just use Jekyll, or you can use Squarespace.
Or
it doesn't really
just
matter.
Use Django, because, like, you're trying to get a gig.
Oh, yeah,
to
well,
just
it's true. I mean,
Django, you know, and then you've got a little, you're busy hosting
Django,
your droplet, and you know how to run it, you know how to deploy it, and you can show that to a person. And it was more work than using Jekyll, but you're eating your own dog food.
I agree with that.
So if someone wants to connect with you or your work, what are the best ways to do that online?
I would say you can send an email to matt@justdjango.com or just go to the contact page on the website. Or if necessary, you can also go to LinkedIn. I'll also send the link for that. But I mean,
you're brave.
I think the contact page. Yeah.
I just updated my LinkedIn thing to like literally say, like, I don't check this. Here's my email. Like, send me a real email if you want me to engage.
Yeah.
But I admire if you're willing to wade through the pool of LinkedIn recruiter emails.
Yeah, I guess it depends on the person. But yeah, definitely emails are going to be better.
Well, thank you so much for coming on. I've been a fan of your resources, so I think it's great that you're continuing to do them. And I've been impressed by seeing your evolution of content and layout and all the rest.
Oh, thanks so much. I appreciate that.
Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, guys. It was awesome.
All right, we'll see everyone next time. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.